Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Boral Limited FY23 half year results call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Vik Bansal, CEO and Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Vik Bansal here. Thanks for joining the call today. I'm joined by Jared Gashel, our acting CFO, who will co-present with me today. Also in the room is Belinda Shaw, our newly appointed CFO, who I'm sure you will all have a chance to meet over the coming weeks and months. Welcome to Boral, Belinda. I'm pleased to be handing down Boral's first half FY23 results today as its ninth CEO in a history spanning 76 years. Before running through the presentation, I encourage participants to refer to our ASX release and 4D financial statements for further commentary on the results. I will also take statements on the slide 2 of this pack as read. If I can ask you to please move to slide 3. We will aim to work through the presentation as quickly as we can to allow time for as many questions as possible. In terms of the agenda, I'll run through our business and performance overview, and Gerald will cover CapEx, balance sheet, capital structure, and cash flow. I'll circle back to cover our initiatives and network, followed by Jared giving us the property update. I will conclude the presentation with our outlook performance before opening the line for questions. Moving on to slide 4. Allow me to reintroduce Boral. We are the largest integrated construction materials company in Australia. Our operational reach spans over 361 sites across each state and territory across the country. I'm pleased to say our focus is now solely within Australia, where we employ over 4,700 people and serve over 14,000 customers. Rarely a day goes by that you wouldn't pass one of our sites or trucks, enter a building, use a road, bridge, tunnel, footpath, or other piece of critical infrastructure that our people and products are responsible for. First and foremost, I like to address people and culture. Safety is the highest priority at Boral, and I'm sad to report that we had one serious injury during the half, whereby a contractor injured his finger when cleaning concrete from an agitator. The contractor has since returned to work, but it does highlight that we have a significant work to do. While TRIFR has improved in first half, we continue to injure our people, and so our focus remains on implementing initiatives to reduce injuries to zero. Let me be very clear, zero harm is our goal. With injuries predominantly the result of manual handling and slips, trips, and falls, trials of early intervention programs are showing promising signs. Boral is an industrial business, and basic safety principles of leadership and management engagement applies every day. As I made my way around our sites in my first month at Boral, I was pleased to witness pre-start and toolbox talks which enable our leaders to have effective, open dialogue about safety in field. We've continued our dust management improvement program to identify and implement improved controls for managing the risk of crystalline silica and other respirable dusts to our workflows. Prior to my commencing, the board undertook an organizational health and culture check of the enterprise, and it has identified clear work programs to be undertaken, which is now underway. Some of that work is to do with organization having tangibles and critical artifacts in place like working operating models, line of accountability, etc. Others refer to intangibles like belief in our values, ability to have open constructive dialogue about the issues to ensure priorities are aligned. The report has been very helpful, especially as we commence our improvement journey. Leadership team has made a commitment to our people to get the culture of the organization right, and we will continue to prioritize that. Unsurprisingly, given broader labor market constraints, our voluntary turnover rate remains high at 19%. While we are not the only company experiencing high turnover due to increased skills demand, we continue to work to get this down to mid-teens through improved employee engagement and workplace programs. I'm very confident of getting to a healthy level by the same time next year. Moving to slide 6. Performance highlights. I am pleased to announce strong growth across key metrics with revenue up 12% half on half to $1.7 billion, EBITDA up 7% to 206.5 million, EBIT up 15% to 95.3 million, resulting in an EBIT margin expansion of 20 basis points to 5.7%. The balance sheet is strong, with cash from operations coming in at 117 million, up 37%. Since engaged with Boral, I moved at pace to ensure the new operating model was in place for calendar 2023, bringing much needed focus and discipline across the business. We have commenced rolling out standardization and simplification initiatives through the PMAP framework. The executive leadership team is now substantially in place, having the right people and leaders, together with getting the culture right, is vital to our good to great journey. Boral has a renewed focus as a solely Australian-focused company, and we will continue to invest in our integrated network and optimize our operating footprint. This commitment means our surplus property portfolio will continue to refresh. I believe, with very high conviction, that Boral's success is dependent on its ability to standardize and simplify itself. I also believe that the only way for Boral to take advantage of its infrastructure, footprint and scale is to be at best at what it does, and that is only possible by developing a self-learning culture of a Boral standard platform. Doing the same operations differently across 100 sites gives Boral no scale advantage. It instead increases cost and complexity. I will talk to this a lot more in coming slides. Moving to slide 7. Turning now to financials on slide 7, this is a strong result in light of the significant impact inflation is having on the business. While I will limit my comments to underlying results, it is also good to see strong statutory results from continuing operations. You will also notice that we are moving towards reporting on a total EBIT basis rather than on an ex-property basis, reflecting our commitment to realizing the full potential of a surplus property portfolio. Net revenue rose 12%. To 1.681 million on improved price and volume across all regions, with the exception of South Australia, which remains a concern both on volume and pricing. EBITDA rose 7.2% to $206.5 million, enabled by cost discipline, which helped offset the sharp increase in costs felt across the business. Underlying EBIT was $95.3 million, EBIT margin of 5.7%, a 20 basis point expansion. NPAT was up 53% to $56.8 million, with the adjusted EPS up 50% to 5.1 cents per share. Operating cash flow was up 37% to $117.4 million. Moving on to slide 8. Performance trends are presented here to give clarity on the performance of Boral to reflect continuing operations. Revenue is heading in the right direction and is expected to continue to grow, due to our ongoing focus on price realization rather than pure recovery. EBITDA and EBIT will continue to benefit from cost discipline as part of the simplification and standardization initiatives. Our goal is continued margin expansion as our performance in this issue is suboptimal. There's more work to do on the cash side, and Jared will speak to that shortly. Inflation remains a key challenge for Boral. Price realization, and not just price recovery, is the main focus and will continue to remain so. Volume was up by more than 4% compared to PCP. While we have outlined an energy cost in the chart, up $40 million over the PCP, this is not the only part of the story. Raw material price inflation continues to flow through as domestic and international supply contracts are renegotiated. Cartage costs continue to escalate with industry-wide driver truck shortages and competition from outside industries such as grain. Repair and maintenance costs are exceeding the prior years due to both contractor shortages, lack of rigor, and replacement part price increases. With total direct cost remains high, continued focus on cost discipline alongside pricing discipline is crucial if we are to achieve our goal of margin expansion. Average sales price was higher across concrete, quarries, and bulk cement compared to prior period. I will now hand over to Jared to talk through the next slides.
Thanks, Vic, and good morning, all. CapEx for the half totaled $104.2 million, up 9% over the prior corresponding period. As a percentage of depreciation and amortization, capital was 93.7%, and we expect the full year to be around 100%. Year-to-date spend is in line with our expectations, with nearly two-thirds of total spend invested in our upstream operations. Particularly pleasing was the completion of the Geelong cement facility and the additional capacity it provides, as well as the progress on the implementation of the chlorine bypass at Berrima, which remains on track for completion in the current year. Turning now to the balance sheet on slide 11. I'm pleased to report that Boral's balance sheet remains very strong. The strength of our balance sheet has enabled us to execute a number of measures during the half to optimize the group's liquidity. I'll cover those measures in more detail on the next slide. With $526 million of cash at 31 December and a net debt ratio of 1.1 times underlying EBITDA, which is well below our target range, optimizing our capital structure will continue to remain a focus. Funds employed totaled $2.26 billion, which is a slight increase from June, driven by the build of net working capital in the period. The net working capital build in the half was primarily driven by the planned build of inventory in advance of the kiln shut at Berrima in January, as well as reduced payables. Turning to slide 12. As noted on the previous slide, the strength of the balance sheet has enabled us to execute a series of measures to reduce our surplus liquidity, including the tender of US$300 million of 144A notes in July, which resulted in a pre-tax gain of $11 million and saves the group more than $16 million of interest per annum. The repayment of US$127 million of 144A notes that matured in November, which saves the group more than $6 million of interest per annum, and subsequent to the period end, the cancellation of $100 million of undrawn committed bank facilities, which were maturing in May 24, were terminated, saving the group nearly $500,000 of interest per annum. Following the exit from the U.S., all debt has been converted to Australian dollars via cross-currency swaps. Turning now to slide 13 and cash flow. I'll focus on continuing operations cash flow for comparability reasons, given the significant impact in the prior year from discontinued operations. Operating cash flow of $117 million is an increase of $32 million, primarily driven by improved operating performance and lower interest and tax payments, partially offset by increased net working capital as I mentioned previously, around the build of inventory and the outflow of payables. The financing outflow of $642 million in the half primarily relates to the previously discussed debt repayments of $629 million, whereas the prior comparable period financing outflow primarily relates to the share buyback. From a statutory perspective, it is worth highlighting that the prior comparable period investing cash flow includes $3.05 billion of net proceeds from business disposals, primarily the North American building products. And the financing outflow primarily relates to the completion of the share buyback, totaling $353 million. I will now hand back to Vic to provide an initiatives update.
Thank you, Jared. On slide 14, I want to discuss the concept of PMAF to drive standardization and simplification across Boral. I first introduced PMAF in my address at the AGM back in November. In each of the quadrants, I will update you on some of the key focus areas and the progress we have made towards achieving them. I spoke to some of the people, safety and culture initiatives earlier. The new flatter organizational structure will drive both alignment but also accountability across the business. Product-based regional structures rather than the functionalized organizational structure backed by standardization will improve agility and accountability. Operating model deployment and without optionality is critical. We all want decentralization, but it will come with standardization. Focus is also heavy on execution and deliverables. In environment and sustainability, it is where we must continue to make progress if we are to reach our emission targets reductions. The circular economy represents a great opportunity for Boral. We expect to complete the Berrima cement plant chlorine bypass in the fourth quarter of FY23, which will increase the use of alternate fuels at the kiln by 30% by the end of FY23, thereafter targeting 60% by FY25. Markets and customers are broad and varied. Operationally, we must focus on improving our customer experience to offer the best possible service outcomes. Work is underway to understand call-to-cash process, and considering the multi-year nature of this initiative, the aim is to break it into deliverables elements before proceeding to the next phase. We remain committed and of high conviction that improving these moments of truth between customer and borrower can significantly assist in price realization. Auto allocations in concrete is work in progress and early days in this project. Sales effectiveness and go-to-market segmentation is also on our radar and work has commenced. Commercial area of the business, among other things, is my big focus and it needs significant leadership and work. Assets is a key focus area for the business with cost escalating across fixed assets, R&M, plant and equipment, and we are looking closely at how we can do better. As mentioned before, the new simplified and standardized framework will drive fleet and equipment utilization. There's significant work to be done here, but when we get it right, we will see considerable benefits flow through. Cartage cost remains high. We must consider the whole supply chain and how that impacts our ability to achieve optimal outcomes for our customers. As you will see from the arrows, we have some way to go, but we have identified our areas of focus for the short to medium term, and we are in the process of working through them. Improving financial, commercial, and operating rigor across Boral might sound basic, but it is a critical element for us to develop an agile, insightful, execution-driven organization which takes joy in delivering outcomes. Moving on to network on slide 15. Boral's vertical integration and its priced assets have always been its strength. It's important to understand the upstream and downstream parts of this network. In the vertically integrated network of Boral, we have infrastructure assets sitting upstream, mainly quarries, cement operations, and bitumen JVs. They are hard to get, replicate, and take years to develop and optimize. These are truly prized assets. Midstream is a recycling operation, and with future being circular, offers a huge opportunity for Boral. Recycling business can supplement quarry materials with recovered materials from C&D waste, which can then be used for applications where customer is looking for recycled mix. Downstream is a concrete batching operations and placing networks which delivers high-performance product closest to the customer's requirements. Here, customer proximity is a leverage and vast footprint is a strength. Same goes for our asphalt plants and businesses which carry out a long list of essential work for its customer base and is a preferred partner on major infrastructure projects. Moving to each part of a network, starting with cement on slide 16. Allow me to now remind you about a significant cement operations. With six key sites on the east coast of Australia, Boral Cement has around 4 million tons per annum capacity. These privileged sites with differential rail access offer operational flexibility, including the ability to manufacture clinker using our own limestone, import clinker to grind into the cement, and supply supplementary cementitious material, including fly ash and slag. We also have a packet cement and dry mix bagging facility alongside the Maldon mill. With strategic manufacturing and importation on East Coast, combined with strategic partnership in South Australia and WA, we have an optimum upstream cement operations. Ensuring that these operations are optimized operationally and utilized fully with the right economics of price and volume is critical in our next phase and will be focused for moving forward. Moving on to quarries on slide 17. On slide 17, you'll find our upstream quarry operations. Our quarries supply around 30 million tons of product annually to downstream operations and customers directly. Not only is there significant supply capacity across all market segments, but our high-quality hard rock and sand resources makes them a truly prized asset. Furthermore, they are efficient and well-located close to key demand centers and rail networks. Importantly, they are circular focused, and in some cases, they leverage our co-located recycling operations to supplement virgin materials where they can, optimizing quarry life and reducing carbon intensity. Improving the utilization and OE of quarries with efficient R&M costs while driving right price volume economics is key focus for quarries. We will continue to develop right strategic assets where and if needed to ensure market leadership. Boral's recycling operations receive and recycle over 2.2 million tons of C&D and excavation materials for reuse in construction, making it one of the largest C&D recyclers in Australia. With a broad range of inbound materials and a high recovery rate, the operations are both efficient and supply much-needed circular solutions to both internal and external customers. A recycling division makes a lot of sense for Boral. It produces products suitable for quarries, concrete, and asphalt mixes, and can even assist with clean fill to rehabilitate end-of-life quarries. Moving slightly upstream through well-located transfer stations to receive the higher part of levy avoidance is next phase of our recycling business. Developing strategic relationships nationally along with quarries is an ongoing program. Moving on to slide 19. Boral's downstream concrete and placing operations deliver sophisticated solutions for customers through its impressive 215 key operational sites network. Our concrete teams have proven deep technical capability, high strength and specialty mixes capable of solving the most complex engineering challenges. Boral is a trusted supplier with the operational capability and scale to support major infrastructure projects across Australia. As mentioned before, proximity to customer application sites or development site is a leverageable strength along with diverse footprint. It is important, though, that the sites are being continuously upgraded and, when appropriate, uprooted to optimize their performance. Reducing running costs per cubic meter while removing poor-performing sites will be a key focus in the coming phase. Moving to slide 20. Asphalt is one of the most diverse businesses in our supply chain in terms of scope and capability. Scope of works range from pothole maintenance through to head contractor work, such as the project we deliver on Norfolk Island, pictured, which was both technically and logistically challenging. Western Sydney Airport is another example where our depth of technical experience and knowledge is a value differential and is why we are awarded such prestigious contracts. The opportunities for this segment excite me. There are a lot of complicated, large infrastructure projects planned for the near future. The pipeline is strong and Boral is well placed to capitalize on these opportunities. Importantly, this business is focused on its carbon footprint with initiatives such as Warm Pave and Innova offerings. Improving it operationally with price and cost discipline is a key focus in this business for its next phase. Moving to slide 21. I spoke earlier about a vertically integrated network. The competitive advantage of the network comes from its ability to remain current and relevant, and hence our commitments to optimize our priced upstream infrastructure assets remain strong. We are making it a strategic priority to invest in our priced cement, quarry, and recycling assets. We have delivered the Geelong Cement Facility and the Tarong Fly Ash Facility. Over at quarries, we have acquired Dunmore Hard Rock Reserve in New South Wales and Hillview Sand in Victoria. In recycling, we have established our red lead base and expanded into broader material solutions. Importantly, we continue with numerous work in progress initiatives across upstream operations to broaden our reach, capability, and ensure our operations are fit for purpose. Moving to downstream network on page 22. Like upstream, you will see our commitment extend to a downstream operational footprint, ensuring we stay close to the customer. We are committed to optimizing a strategic footprint and optimizing plant and equipment to ensure we have sufficient breadth and efficiencies capable of delivering optimal customer outcomes. In concrete and placing, we have acquired land at Badgerys Creek, New South Wales, completed a plant upgrade at West Cosford in New South Wales, and upgraded the West Burley plant in Queensland. Over at Asheville, we have completed the Deer Park Recycle Asheville product upgrade, the Mullup Hot Bin upgrade, also in Victoria, and upgraded our bitumen tank in Toowoomba, Queensland. There's also a long list of work-in-progress initiatives, including new plant upgrades to site across the network. You will see us closing some underperforming plants in coming years as we progress to reaching the portfolio to its contemptuous best. Moving to slide 23. Sustainability and emission reductions continue to be a priority for Boral, with lower carbon concrete uptake gaining momentum at 26% of concrete sales. Our ambition is for low carbon cement to be the standard offering at our batching plants. Construction works of the chlorine bypass continue to progress to enable Berrima to accept more alternate fuels. Boral's FY25 emission target pathway is clear and remains achievable. However, the journey to FY30 Scope 1 and Scope 2 reductions will not be a linear one. We are reliant on technological advances and will continue to invest accordingly. Moving on to slide 24. On this slide, you will see a concept known as cement recarbonation. This refers to the process where part of carbon dioxide emitted during the cement production is reabsorbed by concrete in use through carbonation. Carbonation is a slow process that occurs in concrete where lime, calcium hydroxide, in the cement reacts with the carbon dioxide from the air and forms calcium carbonate. At the end of their useful life, buildings and infrastructure, mainly reinforced concrete structures, are demolished. If the concrete is then crushed, its exposed surface area increases, and this increases the recarbonation rate. The amount of recarbonation is even greater if the stockpiles of crushed concrete are left exposed to the air prior to reuse. The concept of recarbonation is an exciting one for Boral and the circular economy. It has been acknowledged and confirmed by the sixth assessment report of UN IPCC. Impact of these on Boral net emissions, if you take into account amount of concrete supplied by Boral over decades, is significant and material. We will be talking to this lot more in future, and we will ask our ESG investors to take note of the recarbonation potential of the cement and concrete. I will now hand it back to Jared to talk to property.
Thanks, Vic. Moving now to slide 25. It's the commitment to optimizing our upstream and downstream fixed assets that Vic just spoke about that leads us to our property segment. Consistent with the strategy presented at the full year, Boral remains committed to maximizing value through the asset lifecycle. Within the construction materials segment, on the left-hand side of the slide, the team secures locations and approvals necessary to operate our leading integrated network. We then operate and optimize the assets to strengthen performance and profitability and position Boral for long-term success. An important element to our network optimization strategy is staying close to the customer and continually assessing the highest and best use of our property assets. Once it is determined that a site is surplus to operations, the team shifts the focus to repurposing the asset through the best combination of recurring and divestment earnings. With our ongoing commitment to investing in our strategic network and operational footprint, the surplus property pipeline will continue to evolve and refresh over time. Moving to slide 26. Boral's surplus properties include only properties where there is no longer an operational need. Currently, the surplus portfolio of approximately 30 properties is worth more than $1 billion on a present value basis, including both contracted and uncontracted sites. The key current contracted properties include Scoresby and Donnybrook, which are multi-decade projects in Victoria. Turning now to slide 27. As you can see, the opportunity to repurpose our sites at the end of their operating life is a significant one, and the surplus properties at Donnybrook and Scoresby are great examples of finding a better use for surplus sites, with both sites contracted under development agreements in prior years. Donnybrook is a rezoned site that with development and sales underway. Boral's land is expected to support about 3,000 dwellings upon completion of the development and expects to receive payments of $10 million per annum in FY25 through FY27, followed by more than $300 million of undiscounted net cash flows from FY29 until the end of the development, which is currently expected to be in the late 2030s. At Scoresby, approximately half of the 171-hectare site is being rezoned for residential development, with rezoning expected to be completed in 2024. The total undiscounted net cash flow expectation currently for Scoresby is more than $600 million over the life of the development. Turning now to some surplus uncontracted properties on slide 28. In addition to the contracted properties, we continue to progress repurpose opportunities for several other uncontracted sites, including Lone Ponds, which after a substantial amount of effort from the team has been identified as a future investigation area, providing an opportunity to bring forward the estimated project timeline by more than 10 years, with rehabilitation continuing through the Earth Exchange Initiative. In addition to Warm Ponds, there are 27 other properties that we've identified as surplus, including Western Sydney Lakes, which is formerly PLDC, of which Boral is a 40% shareholder, and Bombo, with significant work continuing on both properties to progress the development opportunities on each site. While the timeline for the repurposing of many of these properties is dictated by various factors, including rezoning and rehabilitation, they represent significant value to the business that will deliver substantial earnings in the future. And with that, I'll now hand back to Vic to wrap up the presentation.
Thanks, Sharad. And let's move on now to our priorities and outlook. Zero harm and ongoing improved organizational health and culture will be imperative to our Good to Great journey. Embedding the new operating model, standardization and simplification initiatives will be ongoing. As I said before, the focus on commercial discipline and rigor is critical for us to be able to deliver. Customer service and sales effectiveness will be part of that. And an ongoing focus on cost is critical for to run any industrial business. We will also commence work on our improving our cash conversion cycle. With that in mind, Boral expects second half FY23 EBIT to be broadly in line with first half FY23. That concludes our presentation, and we now invite you to ask questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. The first question comes from Lisa Hun with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning. Hi, Vic. Hi, team. So I just had a question around the strategy. I guess we've seen a few operating models now that kind of say similar things around, you know, the vein of standardization and simplification. I guess what would you say that's different this time compared to maybe past operating models that we've seen?
Yeah, so Lisa, it's very difficult for me to comment on what has happened in the past. I mean, at the end of the day, for an industrial businesses, there are limited levers you can pull as a management team, and they are related to volume, price, and cost, right? So, and what operating model should do is to kind of flatten the organization for a, the widely spread organization like Boral, which increases the accountability, alignment, transparency. And while doing so, you've got to work on price and volume. So not commenting on what has happened in the past, I guess, you know, rather than saying, trust me and time will tell, we just have to work through it and let the results show when it succeeds, I guess, yeah.
Okay, sure. And I guess, you know, there was a decision, you know, not commenting on past management teams, but there was a decision to reorganize the product lines, you know, back to a national basis rather than state-based, I guess. Do you think that's the optimal structure going forward for Boral?
Well, I think again, I'll speak to what we have done. Basically, we know that cement and asphalt we're going to run nationally, and we're going to run concrete and quarries regionally. But even in asphalt, I mean, it doesn't matter what we say to a model, Lisa. The business in Boral gets done where the sites are. So I know organizations get hung up around this national, regional stuff. At the end of the day, the customer in Geelong really does not care who the national EGM is based in Sydney or who the CEO is. What they are concerned about is that the local branch manager, how good he or she is, how effectively they are servicing the client, and how good the assets are. So this whole thing, which we all obviously rightfully so get obsessed about, ultimately organizations work when somebody who's running a branch somewhere is effective. And for all practical purposes, in that example I gave you, for a customer in Geelong, that individual who runs Boral Geelong is the CEO, the CFO, and the board of directors. And our job is to make sure these people in this site are empowered. But in doing so, they are empowered within the guardrails of standardized way of doing business in Boral. 300 sites, we got to standardize. Otherwise, we end up doing the same activity in 300 different fashions. So if you take a step back, Boral's strength comes from its leverage scale. And the only way you leverage your scale is by standardization and simplification. Because if you don't do that, then you might have to have 300 concrete businesses running, competing with other competitors. So that's what we're trying to do.
We can give different names, but basically we're trying to simplify the business, and that's where we're trying to move, yeah?
Okay, sure. Understood. Just a second follow-up question around just average selling prices. So it would imply that they're up 8% as a group. Can you give us a split of price versus mix? Mix typically is a big swing factor from Sunshine.
Yeah, so what we have said in the Prezzo, volume is about 4%. We obviously, as you know very well, Lisa, we've got multiple product lines. And hence, we have decided not to give you guys an average of an average of an average. And if you give your price increase by a product line, then it creates a competitive issues for us. But I can tell you, we've had price traction. We know we've grown volume by 4%, and we have reduced our cost. That is the only way we could have been able to deliver the earnings we delivered with all the inflationary pressure we faced in first half. But I would probably refrain from giving exact numbers for obvious reasons, huh?
Okay, sure. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
The next question comes from Peter Stein with Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Morning, Vic and Jared. Thanks for your time. Vic, a lot of change that the business has been through, new exec in place as well. You commented on the organizational health check or maybe temperature check that was done prior to your arrival. Could you give us a bit of a sense, your best guess of engagement now, you know, a number of months in and your executive is largely set? Is there change fatigue in the organization, or are you seeing regretted losses? Just a bit of a sense there, please.
So a couple of things, Pete. One is, obviously safety is improving, and I always take safety as one of the many bellwethers of organization culture. And I think, and we have talked about this before, I genuinely believe if the organization culture is healthy, it will naturally improve its safety. So I think I'm just trying to give you one data point on that issue. The second point is you're spot on. Leadership is substantially in place. But we have a bit of work more to do to properly embed the operating model. Now, we will be doing engagement survey every year and we'll declare the results. But the culture survey and the organization health survey, which board did just before I started, gave a pretty good insight into how the organization was thinking. And one of the things was that the operating model was not working for the organization. And so getting that done pretty quickly and aligning the organization and empowering the field, as I was telling Lisa before, empowering the field back enough to make sure they can make those decisions they have to make within the framework was one of the key pillars. The second piece was around clarity of the purpose and strategy, and we are working through with the organization, and we have a lot of communications. Just to give you a sense, Pete, I visited 34 sites in the first month, 6 weeks, and I just want to mention it again is that our field is doing a great job. In spite of all the challenges we are facing, our people are working very hard, very committed, and they are really keen to see Boral succeed. Hence, the changes we have made, I do feel they have been received very well. Of course, in a workforce of 5,000, it's difficult to please everybody, of course, but overall, I would say we are in a much stronger position culturally, engagement-wise, safety-wise, and we'll continue to monitor that, and we'll do all the activities we need to do, and we'll come back to you with the scorecard once we are ready to do the engagement survey.
Thanks, Vic. Useful color. And then just a quick markets question. Your planning framework for markets, perhaps by end segment, over the next 6 and 12 months, how are you thinking about market development?
I mean, market in general, Pete?
I suppose I'm curious about your expectations around volume in each of your major end markets. Detached resi models.
The vertical integrated network, so it is basically interrelated quite a lot, especially the concrete, cement quarries. Asphalt has a slightly different market, of course, which is to do with road infrastructure. Overall statement, Pete, I'm not bullish, neither I'm bearish on next 6 months. I think We're not seeing a massive headwind or tailwind. I think the quoting activity is healthy. So I'm for the next 6 months, I'm okay on the top line, I feel. The challenge for us remains is our ability to continue to get pricing in the marketplace against an inflationary environment, and then obviously ability to manage cost. That's the biggest challenge for the next 6 months we as a management team is focused on.
Fantastic. Thanks, Vic. Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it.
The next question comes from Simon Thackeray with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, Vic. Good morning, Jared. Thanks for taking the questions. Just going to that point on price, some of the New South Wales competitors have announced $20 a cube on concrete for both January and April of this year, which is sort of unheard of. You went in August versus October last year. Can you tell us what your intentions are in terms of pricing in the market and the timing of that pricing?
Couple of things on this, Simon. So one, rather than not giving exact number, our intention is that we will go again in the market for the pricing. We're working through it. I think we've done one price increase for 1st of February, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And we will go again if we have to. The old era of going prices once a year, every 6 months is not valid anymore. The inflation is coming at us. And we will continue working on that throughout the country, not just New South Wales. So it's an absolute the most topical issue on the table.
Okay, Vic, that's helpful. And then just sort of returning to Pete's earlier question on end market exposures, noting that there's no disclosure anymore on end market exposures or your view on what non-res versus attach, et cetera, are doing, which was a feature of the past. But can you say with any certainty at this stage whether you see any change, whether it's cyclical or perhaps strategic, in the end market exposures you wish to target?
I think from our perspective, I know Boral has generally targeted infrastructure quite strongly. But when we actually look at the price volume mix, our aim would be to get that mix a little bit more balanced. So we will continue to target infrastructure, Simon. But I think at the end of the day, where we get the optimum pricing and the volume service, that's where we're going to go. Fundamentally, the way I'm looking at it is we are doing our segmentation work. And we would be, in my mind, is we will be going to all markets. Depending on where the market, where we see bullish. I don't know if Jared, you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Simon, the one thing I would say is that the shape is going to change. I mean, slightly, we have obviously, I mean, I think you might even publish that detached is coming off, so we will see some of that shift, but so far it's not been meaningful.
Okay, so in summary, you're kind of agnostic on end markets in a sense. It's just having the right capacity in the right place. Is that the summary?
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah.
Okay. And Vic, just on PMAF, thanks for the update on that and also the progress bars that you've put in there. There's obviously nothing in significant items in continuing operations. So any cost, is there any sort of a guide on what sort of cost of flattening the structure was in this half or in the prior half? And I assume, given that there's nothing in the significant items, that any costs of implementation of PMAF are just being taken in the operating margins, as will be, of course, the benefits as they come through.
Jared, answer that question on numbers, man, but I won't mind talking to PMAF after that, Jared.
Yeah, I mean, Simon, the one thing I would say is that from the significant items this half, we obviously benefited from some of the sort of measures taken around the debt with the 11.4 in significant items, as well as the divestment sort of settlement of networking capital. If you look in restructure and onerous costs, the $6 million is a net number, but by and by, the overall cost of the implementation of flattening was either taken in the prior year or not meaningful in the current half.
Okay, that's helpful. And on PMAF, Vic?
To add to that, what we are trying to do in operating model and operating design is we are working to flatten the organization to improve the spans of the leaders and managers. And as you all know, from that perspective, it just gets the agility in the organization quite a bit. If you then take on top of that a turnover which businesses like ours are facing around 15-19%, we believe we can do this quite effectively without spending a lot of money, because it's about respanning and then making sure the vacancies as they appear, not fill them. And I think that has been quite valid and quite successful in the first half, and we intend to do that in the second half as well.
That's helpful. And Jared, I have the quickest financial question for you. The rehab of the clay pit in Scoresby, which you call out in your slides, just confirming that the remediation work there will be in the property segment balance sheet, you know, the assets and liabilities. And is that part of CapEx in the guidance, the remediation costs?
In terms of the rehab at One Pollens, it's Scoresby, sorry, that's being completed by the development partner. So Mervac's responsible obligation. So that was part of the agreement. And then on One Pollens, which I highlighted in this slide, that's actually a revenue-generating activity where we're running our earth exchange program at that site.
Excellent. Thanks so much, gentlemen.
The next question comes from Peter Wilson with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thanks, morning. I'm just looking at your guidance and just wondering why we might not have expected a better result at EBIT in the second half versus the first half. Because as you say in one of your earlier answers, you are expected to get further price. Rainfall will likely be better. You've completed the Geelong cement terminal in the first half. So why would we not expect higher profits in the second half versus the first half? What am I missing there?
So thanks for that. It's a couple of things. One, listen, I think there is variability coming into our P&L, which is generally partly out of our control and partly we just got to see how that affects. I mean, the whole inflation issue is current and real, and I do appreciate the fact that, you know, when we talk about inflation, quite often it starts with energy and stops at energy. What we are seeing and what most industrial companies are seeing is the tail end effect of that. So, for example, when I buy an RP plant and equipment today, Pete, the vendor who's going to supply me today or quote me today is going to base that on the highest possible energy price because that's his inventory. That's his supply chain. That goes same whether I buy a truck, whether I do any R&M equipment. So for us, even if the energy price does fall off or will slightly taper off, at the end of the day, the inflation is still coming our way. The price traction, as you all know, we will give it a pretty good shot and we'll keep trying till we get some price realization, but still remains unknown. So if you look at all the variables coming out, the number of days are less in second half compared to first half. So if you look at all those variable elements, we felt that the realistic number was what we actually gave you in outlook statement.
Okay, good. That makes sense. And just looking at the first half result, it looks like quarries was the outlier in terms of revenue growth, 2% growth versus 10 to 15 in the other products. Was that a mix effect or something else that drove that weaker quarries result, or weaker relative result?
The one thing to be careful on is that is an external revenue only. So obviously the supply internally would have followed the sort of concrete increases. Whereas the external market, it really depends on the products you're selling. So I wouldn't read too much into that.
Okay, good. And lastly, if I could just get a comment on the decision not to pay an interim div in the context of a strong balance sheet and net debt in line with target. Just a comment on that and maybe what we need to change to see Boral start to distribute cash again.
Yeah, so I'll take that and I'll hand over to Jared at the end as well. I'm sure he has comments on that. Look, at the end of the day, where we are today and the amount of work in front of us and the things we want to do in Boral, obviously board decided not to pay a dividend at this point. That doesn't mean that will not be revisiting that decision, obviously, every 6 months. But fundamentally, there's a real opportunity to reinvest into Boral. And we think, based on strategic, some of the options we are working through, there's a better option. But do you want to add to that, please?
Yeah, no, I think there's a couple points I would add. I mean, clearly it's the board's decision. So, I mean, it's not for us to sort of question and their decision. But I think there's probably a couple factors in that. One, we have pretty limited franking credits. So we're sitting at about 2 cents of a fully franked dividend that we could pay at the moment. And the second piece is, as we've disclosed in our free cash flow, the free cash flow from continuing ops was 23 mil. So, you know, the meaningful cash generation didn't come through in the first half. And at least personally, I'd like to see sort of the dividends be paid out of cash generation as opposed to out of debt.
Got it. Okay. Thank you both.
Your next question comes from Sam Searle with Citi. Please go ahead.
Oh, hey, team. Thanks for taking my questions. Quickly, just looking at slide 9 there, the delta of energy costs appear to have slowed and essentially been flat for the last 12 months. Are you seeing that rate of change continue into the second half of 23, in particular in light of the recent kind of government initiatives?
Well, I think I'll come to the government one, but if you look at the first half was 119, the second half is 122. At the end of the day, even if it's flattened, it's still a real cost hitting our P&L, and that's what we got to recover from the marketplace. Even if flattened, but as I said before, it's just not the energy, it's all the other costs which is hitting us on practically daily basis. It still needs to get recovered.
Too easy, okay. And then I guess with the shutdowns and the weather and divestments over the last couple of years, could you perhaps talk to the normal seasonality of the pure Australian business and what you expect that is now?
The point is, apart from the seasonality around holidays, which we obviously have, and number of days and all that stuff, at the end of the day, we just got to figure out when we talk about weather cyclicity, is it a price issue or is it a cost issue? Is it a volume issue or a cost issue? Because do the projects really leave us when the weather changes or they come back, but we have to deliver them at a higher cost? So we just got to work that through. But I'm not seeing any different cyclicity at this point, second half compared to first half. Jared, do you want to add that?
Yeah, no. I think the reality is you do have, the counting of days is the primary difference, right? Yeah, fewer days in the second half than the first half, not just because of a February short month. You have people taking longer holidays in January versus what you have in the first half. But outside of that, it then becomes largely project-driven and work-driven. So, the weather in Australia is relatively pretty good most of the year. So,
too easy. And then I guess on the concrete result, and I appreciate you won't talk to exact numbers, but that 30%, any chance you can split back, revenue, volume, mix, or any colour to help us kind of understand what happened during the half?
Yeah, I think we obviously, because of competitive issues, there's only limited information you can give on these things, but the way I would, probably start to talk around this, you've got upstream assets, obviously your cement and quarries. These are long-term priced assets infrastructure. And because of the nature of them and the nature of investment in those, their earnings potential should match those infrastructure priced assets type returns, right? Then you have a downstream assets like concrete batching plants and asphalt, whose whole competitive advantage comes from the footprint proximity to the customer, as I was talking about before, giving an example of the Geelong. I think those have a different return profile compared to cement, of course, a much lower profile. We do believe that there's a work to be done in Boral around the profitability improvement by each asset class, and concrete being the big one, considering it has got 200 plus sites all over the country. Because ultimately, for this whole network to really work properly and be a truly competitive advantage for Boral, each of the asset class has to deliver its own returns. Concrete has to do it, quarries have to do it, cement has to do it, recycling has to do it. And they although they're interdependent on network, but they are not necessarily, they still have to make their own profitability. And right now, we have a lot of work to do on concrete side. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Would it be fair to say then maybe the volumes in concrete were similar to that of cement, but the price was a little bit more aggressive?
Well, no, I think you have to understand, if you look at the network, significant portion of upstream products goes into our own network and then go outside as well. So there's a price issue there, and if you are not careful, you know, you can end up making your downstream brothers uncompetitive against other customers of upstream. So it's a little bit more complex than that, but we got to just work it through in an extremely disciplined structure over the next 6-9 months to get that issue resolved, and then while holding people accountable for the maximum profit of an asset. I think that's where it is. I mean, you can easily get lost into a net vertical integrated network in your transfer pricing, and but at the end of the day, you know, there is a work in progress right now, and obviously as Jared goes into another assignment, Belinda will take that over and we'll move forward from there.
Got it. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the answers.
Your next question comes from Lee Powell with UBS. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Vic. Thanks, Jared. Vic, just following on from Simon's question around price, I know you obviously don't really want to talk about the level of price increase. Can you talk a little bit about maybe percentage realisation then? So what do you think we should assume when we think forward and put in, look, you know, do our own work around announced price increases? Like, what do we actually factor in for percentage realisation on that? And maybe if you can talk about how that trended through the half as well, it'd be good.
Happy to. So if you just go to slide 7, which probably kind of talks to some extent, the lack of operating leverage. So when you're trying to get a price traction in the marketplace, there is a two kind of step process. One step is to use the price traction at worst case to cover your inflation. And at the best case, use that traction to convert into a price realization, which leads to margin expansion. So if you look at our P&L on slide 7, I mean, you'll see our net revenue was up. So we know volume was up by 4%. Look at EBITDA. The dollars was up, 206.5 versus 192.6. But look at a margin. Margin compressed by 50 basis points, which tells you that we are clearly not getting price realization. We're getting price traction. And then going back to Simon's question, which was a valid question, saying, What that point I'm trying to make it and prove is that we need to go again if you have any chance to get a proper price realization which sticks through the cycle, and that's not where we are today. And the best thing is we are not getting an operating leverage, which I would like to see, and that can only be seen through margin expansion. Now, you can improve your operating leverage by managing cost as well, which we are trying to do. So ultimately, let's imagine you get a price of 5% on a certain cost. That 5% could be enough to give you some margin expansion if you're also reducing your cost. So we are kind of working through on all angles. We're trying to get the volume. We're trying to get the price increase, which hopefully gets into realization. And part of realization is also to work on the cost. So the true test will be when we start to see a margin expansion at an EBITDA and EBIT level, where it's material enough to say we're getting something. And we are not there as yet, as you can see.
Yeah. And then just on the concrete piece that Sam talk to, obviously external revenues are up. I'm assuming there's some shift, like is concrete placing now being reported in that number that you talk to?
So concrete placing is part of that slide.
Yep.
It's the same. So exactly, it's part of the same number, yeah.
Okay, that kind of makes sense. And then just a final one on property, just should we assume anything in the second half? And then maybe just a longer-term view around a preference to develop or sell some of these sites like Bombo?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first the answer to the first question is I would no. We gave the guidance in August that we weren't expecting property earnings in FY23, and that hasn't changed. In terms of the long-term strategy, it's really site by site. And I think you'll find even when you look at some of the sites, I mean, you take One Ponds, it's a 1,000-hectare site. That is going to be a mix of some residential that you will ultimately be divested. It'll be a mix of industrial, commercial. So something that scale is going to be probably a mix of retain and hold or develop and hold versus divest, whereas maybe a smaller site, it's, you know, you just don't develop it. You just straight divest. But I think it's case by case, unfortunately.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
The next question comes from Anderson Chow with Jarden Group. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my questions. I have a few. First one is the low of carbon concrete product penetration has risen quite significantly in the last sort of 12 months or so. What impact has this contributed to ASP increase during first half of 23, if any?
Anderson, I think on the LCC, we're obviously not going to talk too much. The one thing I would say is that a significant majority of the penetration is coming from Envirocrete, which is, as I think we've talked before, is relative price parity to non-LCC concrete.
Okay, thanks. And the second question is just thinking about Vic's previous success at Cleanaway, solid waste recycling, and we currently do around about 2.2 million ton, and we need about sort of 30 million ton aggregates. Should we expect a kind of a very rapid increase in recycling waste for reuse in the coming years? And how does the cost of recycled material versus virgin product currently compare if we take into account of the kind of potential cost savings not having to use landfill?
Just to add to that, Anderson, I was very surprised when I joined Boral, although there was, I was lucky to have a lot of information in my hand before I joined. I was genuinely surprised with the size of the recycling business in Boral, positively. I mean, for a recycling business in Boral to do 2 million tons per annum, that's a material number. It has good assets, and they are working in a lot of cases next to a quarry. So they are basically can supplement quarry material. Now, how fast it grows depends on how we kind of build those assets, but I am quite positive and bullish about this piece part of the business, like other things as well. The thing you should reflect on is every ton which recycling can replace gives you a longer life in quarry. So it's a multiple benefit. You have benefit of today, but it is also giving you a virtual quarry, and every ton is your long life. So it has a double effect. Plus, it solves the circular economy discussions, which our customers definitely want. So I think there's a piece of work to be done here. The other issue is in a C&D recovery, which is what we want to focus on, purely on C&D recovery, nothing else, because that is relevant to what we do. It's our material which goes out, and we can do the circular. It's really not only a good story, but quite an accretive story. But the second issue is, depending on what part of the value chain we go in a waste, there's a significant amount of value to be created over a period of time. So, as I said, I was surprised with 2 million tons we do.
Okay. So it's starting at a good level, but you can sort of see sort of more upside in the volume sense. Okay. And another obvious question, if I may. So Seven Group last year or earlier last year sort of set out their target or where they hope Boral's long-term EBIT margin could be, and they talk about 10 to 12% around sort of fiscal 24, 25. Based on what we have, what you have been talking about, Vic, so far this morning, do you think that sort of time frame and that sort of target is still reasonable? Thank you.
Well, I won't comment on the time frame because we're working with the board on the strategy document and everything, but can I just say I am 100% aligned with them that this business is a double-digit EBIT business. That's what it should be delivering, and that's what we are aiming to do. We just got to work through the time frame and all the stuff, but I am 100% aligned with them around delivering double-digit EBIT. And I do think it's doable.
Yep. Very clear. And just a last question, if I may, just regarding the property development, one thing I noticed that we seem to have added in this result is we kind of provided a rough timeline on contracted property sales, which mainly sit in the 5 to 15 year time frame. Should I take it that there's sort of still a lot more work that needs to be done? To get this site to a kind of a realization stage. If you can comment on any sort of particular challenges that we're facing, that would be good.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, I think, Anderson, the one thing I would say is the two sites that we've highlighted on the uncontracted sites being Warm Ponds, and well, two of them being Warm Ponds and Bombo. Warm Ponds, the sort of getting added to the investigation zone area, has brought forward the development by about 10 years. So that's, if you think through where the, a lot of that value is sitting, you know, a 1,000-hectare site just outside of Geelong, probably makes up a big piece of that.
Okay, got it. Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from Keith Cho with MST Marquee. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Vic and Joe. Thanks for taking my question. I'll be brief given the timing. So just want to go back to a comment you made, Vic, around leverage of the business. I know when you look at the earnings versus last year, the margins haven't yet recovered back to where they were this time last year, but certainly on a half-on-half basis they have improved. So, you know, the leverage does seem to be flowing through the business, albeit from pretty much, you know, very minimal earnings in the second half of last year. Do you think that is principally, if we look at it half on half rather than versus the PCP, do you think that leverage is a combination of both price and volume that's helping deliver that half on half margin improvement? Or could you give us a sense of, you know, whether you think it is more price, less volume? And the reason I say that is just a comment made at the AGM that you're not yet confident that with volume increases you get leverage through the business. So any change in your views there would be helpful.
So, I mean, Keith, as you know, three things obviously help your operating leverage, right? Volume, price, and cost. Price is the best one for operating leverage because, you know, it has a better impact on the margin expansion, as you know. And then better your cost, better your operating leverage, as I say. Right now, to be fair, in the first half, we got all three. We got some volume, we got some price, and we also got some cost, right? But we haven't done the kind of math saying what percentage came from there. Bottom line is, as you know, and as you all know, this is absolutely the work ahead of us to make sure all three carries on with it to get to the numbers we're looking to get to over the next couple of years. So I can't give exact number, but it came from all three key. That I can assure you, volume, price, and cost.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. And then just with respect to your views on competitive dynamics within the industry, I mean, even to get the improvement that Boral is seeing at the moment and some of the industry participants are seeing in their earnings suggests that there is the discipline out there is better. Can you pass comment on, you know, whether your views have changed on the competitive dynamics of the industry and whether you think this improvement in industry discipline can hold going forward?
But the view I have, Keith, is it has to hold. Otherwise, you know, it just makes no sense because otherwise inflation is real and that cost is not going away. And as I mentioned before, even if the energy price does flatter, the tail end effect of that energy prices is still coming our way for next 6 to 9 months. So, and we are not alone in that. Everybody else has to face the same thing. What we can commit is what is in our control, manager, that we make sure that Boral remains committed to getting that price realization from the marketplace. However long it takes, how much effort it needs to take, we just got to stick with it because I don't think so there's an option. Now, I can tell you there are states around the country where we are doing much better than the others. You know, I know South Australia, we're not getting as much traction as I like to see, but other states we are. So there is still a challenge and there's still a behavior and a still a different level of engagement on this issue, which is real, and frankly, I know every one of us are facing it. So, but from our perspective, two things I'm very focused on: making sure the price, and the second thing is fixed price contracts. We as an industry, and that's not just a Boral statement; it's an industry statement. Fixed price contract is the biggest, in my mind, issue if you're ever going to get the price traction, whether it's Boral or industry. And I think we are working pretty hard as Boral to get away from that as much as possible.
Do you think your industry peers will be doing the same, as in going from fixed price to variable price contract? And perhaps just on that South Australia point, you know, maybe there's a bit of colour. What do you think is the biggest difference in South Australia relative to the other states as to why you're not seeing the price traction in that state?
As you know, Keith, no company can do what they want to do around price space and around a competitive space in isolation. So you have to work and you have to make those choices practically every day. So I'll come to the fixed price before. Like every price traction initiative gets delayed by fixed price. Like Simon, I think Simon mentioned before, there's a competitor taking price in January and February. If 50% of their book is price fixed price, well, they're not going to see any of that dollar for another 6 months or whenever the fixed price finishes. So it is, as I said, it's the biggest negative on a price realization kind of focus for any industry, not just the construction industry. Now, you combine that issue with all the construction small contractors who are failing or builders who have gone down for, and you actually unpeel that onion, ultimately the biggest issue is the fixed price. So we are all hurting. Everybody's hurting, and everybody talks about it. But the question is, at some point, leaders have to lead. And from our perspective, I'll just keep talking about it and do what I have to do, and then hopefully, sense will prevail across the industry.
And Vic, sorry, just coming back on that, the point of difference in South Australia relative to the rest. Have you had a past comment on why Boral may be struggling a bit more in South Australia to gain price?
I mean, I think it's, again, as I said, Boral is performing in a competitive dynamics in that region, and so you respond to what it is, and so, it's just the fact is that we haven't been able to get a traction, which is disappointing compared to every other state.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much.
The next question comes from Scott Ryle with Rimewatt Equity Research. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Vic. I wanted just to get your thoughts on Boral's sustainable competitive advantage. And you've had the benefit of coming in from the outside and assessing this. I've heard you talk a lot today about the network, which I get, and also the upstream infrastructure, which I get. But as you pointed out, historically, Boral hasn't received the return profile that you would expect off of those assets. In your mind, does Boral only have a sustainable competitive advantage when you've done all the initiatives on slides 21 and 22, which are really helpful? Thank you.
No. So I think, because I think network is only beneficial, in my mind, in any industry or any company, when you're constantly working on it. I'll give you a real example, right? So you have a network benefit. You have a quarry and you've got a concrete batching plant being serviced from that quarry or similar with bitumen and asphalt plant or recycling combined with quarry. And so you have a quarry asset, which is a 40, 50-year-old asset, which is kind of immovable because that's a fixed big asset with a price infrastructure. And let's assume that is attached to 20 quarry concrete plants. The development potential around those concrete plants changes constantly. So you might have a concrete plant today in Double Bay, and then the development is fully there, and now there are only the renovations, but there would be a development happening in inner Western Sydney. And if you're not constantly refreshing your network, especially the downstream ones, you miss out the opportunity to optimize your network, right? Why do you have downstream assets? It's all to do with the customer proximity. Because that gives you advantage. You can do more truck turns. You can service the market quickly, cost effectively. So if you're not constantly refreshing your downstream assets to suit the market you serve or the area you serve, you're now stuck in a network which was probably valid for 10 years ago. And now no longer is your competitive advantage, but actually becomes your deleverage. So when I talk about making it sustainable, I'm saying keep working on the upstream infrastructure assets. Let's make sure that each one of them gives the returns they have to give and start working on the downstream footprint with an agility to make sure we optimize them. There's no use having 200 concrete batching plants if, say X percentage of them are not performing. Well, clearly then we've got to move. They are real assets and they're movable. To some extent, they're movable. We can move them around. And that's when I talk about what I call our network being a truly competitive advantage of Boral. That is what brings sustainability, and that's what we're trying to do, and that's the whole the whole idea meant to reintroduce the whole network story and talk about upstream, downstream is exactly that. So you will see us keep working on what we have shown in 2021. That'll be kind of standard feature as we develop and as we move it around.
Okay, great. And then could you just comment, you've got the delivered and work in progress items on slides 21 and 22. Are they, and any other initiatives you're thinking about, are they within the current CapEx envelope?
No, I think this is what we have said. I mean, I think Jared has made us on CapEx. We will be holding ourselves quite CapEx discipline to the closer to the DNA number. And anything in future, if it is outside the CapEx, we will try to give you a heads up as much as practically possible. But none of them is outside the CapEx.
Yeah, okay.
That one thing I would say, Scott, is just the time. The slides 21 and 22 aren't sort of FY23 time horizons. So when you look
at
St. Peter's plant, that will carry over into the next financial year. So it's more just where the strategic plans headed by product, and then obviously we're guiding the capital spend in dollar terms for the financial year.
Yeah, and can you do everything you want to do on these two slides without meaningful acquisition?
I think frankly, you know, we got to get our house in order first, man. We just got to make sure we are very focused on what we got to do. There's no use going and spending money and destroying shareholders' value. So I think our real focus is to make sure our house, our network is as optimum as we can. And if in doing so we find a hole or a white space where we need to do something, then we'll go take to the board. But right now there's enough to do within our parameters to make it happen.
Okay, great. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on the telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Daniel King with CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi. Just a quick follow-up on Sam's question on slide 9, inflationary pressures. Vic, I know you sort of commented it already, but just note that many of the components, particularly gas and coal, have come off quite meaningfully in recent months. I mean, what is the typical lag that you see in these costs, and are you factoring any of these benefits into the second half guidance?
Well, I mean, you can imagine, Daniel, when we do kind of an internal work on forecasts, you take into account pluses and minuses, of course. So you can only guess, you know, we can say, okay, the gas could be in this range and electricity would be in this range. So yes, we have taken that into account. But I do want to emphasize the point again, is apart from energy cost, there's a whole other inflation which comes to an industrial company like ours. Anything which we buy today, yesterday, tomorrow, next 1 month is going to be based on the inventory built by the vendors based on the last pricing, right? So, you know, and that is what we are facing, which is a real deal for us. You put on top of the labor, cartage, any truck we buy, any plant equipment we buy, they are not coming down. So I know, and I said before as well, Daniel, is that we seem to start and finish inflation discussion with energy. I'm just expanding that horizon. The inflation is coming in our P&L across board, and energy is not the only big line in my P&L. The cartage is big. The R&M is huge. Plant and equipment is huge. So they're all coming in our way, and hence the whole focus on getting the price out of the marketplace.
Thanks, Vic. That's it for me.
The next question comes from Shora Bison with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, Vic. Jared. This is Shora from Bank of America. Thank you for taking the question. I just quickly wanted to follow up on Anderson's question on your long-term EBIT margin sort of guidance, right? And so we're just curious to hear your thoughts, right, of the three levers that you mentioned, right? Which do you think will be the most important for us to move from the current 6% to the 10-12%? Will a large part of that come from lowering costs based on some of the new initiatives you've mentioned on making your procedures pretty standard? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I think what the way it works, and I've seen it work in past, is it is almost what I call aggregation of marginal gains, right? So, you know, every dollar you work on cost, and at the same time, every dollar you get on price has a compounding effect on your operating leverage. So, it's all interrelated. I wish I could tell you today to go from 5.7 basis point to 12 basis point, 300 basis point is going to come out of cost, and 200 could become. We kind of have a roughish idea, but at the end of the day, it all three has to work for us to get there, because I know how compound should get. So I can't give you a direct number, but I can assure you they're all three equally important to make it, to get to where we need to get to. So I can't say one or the other. So the focus has to be all three, volume, price, and cost.
Thank you, Vic. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Bensall for closing remarks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, operator. Appreciate that. Listen, I thank you all for the support. We look forward to spending some time with you. I would also be remiss in not thanking Jared. Jared, for doing a great job and bringing us here, and welcoming Belinda for the next phase of the Boral's journey. Thank you all for the support, and we look forward to seeing you on the roadshow. Appreciate it. Thank you.